Minister of Finance, Michael Owens, for the DEP, Honorable Dr. Mayor and his OG. Welcome to the Office of Safety, also represented here. Somali, why are you sitting so far?
I'm coming now, Chief.
Yeah, I need you next to me. Don't be so far. And welcome to our honorable members. Somali, are there any apologies?
No, Chief.
No apologies. Thank you very much. We've got also the National Treasury, a gentleman from the Treasury. He will introduce himself and he will take us through the Treasury perspective of the Western Cape. Honorable members, Chabulile also sent to us a request document. Thank you very much for that paper one. And then you've also received the quarterly economic brief last week from the PBO. Read it. It is the additional reading for you. And this can assist you in your debate on the budget vote. Treasury, are you ready? There's a picture on the screen. We also recognize Ongo Monakeri. Welcome, Ongo Monakeri. He's setting a good record. He's nearly 100% in the center. Yeah, just waiting for more than chicken. Okay.
By the provinces in the financial year and in total about 9.9 billion rand was tabled as an adjustment to provincial budget in the last financial year. But after that adjustment, provinces went and underspent by the 6.2 billion rand. So that total adjustment were not necessarily fully spent. And out of those total adjustments, the Western Cape accounted for about 4.6% of the 9.9 billion, which is about 549 million. And the province went and underspent also by an amount higher than what the adjustment were, which is about 706 million. And looking at where the adjustment were made in the Western Cape, the biggest item that received the highest amount was goods and services, which was mainly the maintenance and repairs in your department like education and transport. And in compensation of employees, there were also savings that were identified by the province, and as a result, there was a reduction from compensation of employees of 296. And from capital, there was also some reclassification of expenditure from capital to goods and services. I think that's the one that related mainly to the maintenance expenditure. Hence, there was that reduction of 179. Moving on to the slide after that, the third slide, we look at the aggregated provincial expenditure. Provinces spend 8.9% of their budget. The Western Cape was a little bit lower than your provincial average at 98.8%, and I've already indicated the expenditure of 706 million. And if you look at the proportional share of the budget of the province, I mean the Western Cape has got the lowest share of their compensation budget to total provincial budget compared to other provinces, which means that then they've got a room to maneuver and allocate money to other critical service delivery areas. So their share of compensation is at 53% compared to the highest, which is Limpopo, at 69%. So you can already see that the province then has a room to allocate funding to other areas like transfers and subsidies, which then gets 70%. Moving on to the next slide. The next slide focuses only on the Western Cape budget, looking at the departments that we have contributed significantly to the under expenditure, which will be education, which spends 99.2% of its budget, but they underspend by 160 million. And then we've got health, which spends 98.9%, and then there was 242 million under expenditure. And then the third one that contributed significantly was transport, which spent 97.5%, underspending by 185 million. And some of the issues that resulted in that added expenditure emanated from compensation of employees. Even though there was a reduction in compensation of employees in the adjustment, the province went and underspent on compensation again at year end by about 239 million, and reason there being that there were some low recruitment in certain areas, which then resulted in savings. And then there was also goods and services. I mean, maintenance was also underspent by some federal departments, and then there was also contractors that also contributed to that goods and services under expenditure. There was also an under expenditure of 99 million on CAPEX. And then some of the reasons there that were given by Department of Health was that there were some requirement delays. Moving on to the next slide. The next slide looks at the education. We start with the aggregate sector spending. In aggregate, first of all, from the provincial budget, the education sector received 41% of the total provincial budget in aggregate. And at the end of the financial year, the sector spends 99.5% of its budget. And once again, the Western Cape was slightly below the national average at 99.2%. And I've already indicated the under-expenditure of 160 million. And then the next slide focuses mainly on the education in the Western Cape, not the sector. And then we try to break down the 160 million where it came from. And the most of the areas where it came from was all other programs, with the exception of public ordinary school program, all other programs under spend. In terms of economic classification, it was compensation of employees and goods and services and KTEX in the main, which underspent. And then transfer the subsidies was overspent. And we look at some of the issues there that contributed to that underspending on capital infrastructure. It was mostly on upgrade and addition projects, which were underspent. And there were also the issue of low recruitment. In terms of goods and services, there was also an under-expenditure on scholar transport there, and also on the school equipment. The table, the small table below there, the larger table also breaks down the expenditure on some of the critical service delivery areas in education. We look at the LCSM, how it has performed, and you will see the issue of property maintenance, which was underspent by 90.7 million. And then also the under-expenditure on some of the transfers to school. But, the over-expenditure on transfers and substitutes was made mostly on LCSM to Section 21 schools. So what the department normally does is that they always bring forward the transfers for the next financial year to prepare the school to do their requirements early. So they don't then get delayed. So hence there's that over-expenditure on Section 21 schools transfers. The next slide looks at the compensation of employees in education. The first graph we start with the aggregates for the provinces. Once again, education in the Western Cape has got the lowest share of COE to total budget, which is at 74%. If you compare it with KZN, which is already 83%, which then means that the department also has got a room, to allocate some funding in other critical service delivery areas. I mean, goods and services there is the highest in terms of the share at 11%, and also transfers and subsidies at 10.5%. But if you look at the table on the right, which looks at the learner teacher ratio. We look at that table is an evidence of the first graph. Western Cape, if you look in terms of the state head educators, they've got the highest learner teacher ratio at 35.8 compared to the national average of 33.4. But when you bring in the they are the second highest to Gauteng. Sorry about that, they are the second highest of housing. And then if you bring back now the both the state paid and the SGB paid, they become also the second highest, but with Limpopo being the highest. And then if you look on the table on our left side, so the table looks at the personnel numbers, the movement of personnel numbers between March last year and the end of the financial year. I think what is comforting there is that even though the numbers have reduced by about 205 between March, the beginning of the financial year and end of the financial year. However, if you look at your permanent educators, the numbers have increased. So the reduction was not necessarily on your core service delivery or frontline services staff. So the frontline service staff still increased. And then the next slide, we looked at the learner performance, particularly the matric performance, but we also look at the throughput. We look at the matric pass rate, and then we compare it with the number of learners that would have entered your grade 2 in 2007, and then we say that if we take that number and then we compare it to the pass rate, what would be the percentage? In terms of the traditional matric pass rate, the national was 75.1, and then Western Cape was significantly higher than that at 82.8%. But now if you compare that with the number of learners that would have entered grade 2 in 2007, that pass rate in a true sense of the matter becomes 49%. And then if you then look at the grade, bring the figures forward and look at those that would have been in grade 10 in 2015, the pass rate becomes 55.8%, which is significantly higher than what the national would have been. So the national would have been 37.4, and then Western Cape was at 55.8. So the province is not doing too bad compared to other provinces. Even though they've got the highest learner teacher ratio, I mean the result then shows that, I mean, despite that, the province is producing some of the good results relative to those that we have had the lowest teacher ratio. Then moving on to the, I think the education LCSM will keep the slide because I've already touched on the non-negotiable. Then we'll move to the next slide, which is health. Health in aggregate, the under expenditure for the sector was 1.2 billion, 99.3% has been spent of the total budget, and Western Cape was slightly below that at 98.9%, and they underspent by 242 million, and then we'll break it down in the next slide. And then the below table just shows, I mean, the payment on this big issue in health, the medical legal claims, and then we just check the payment and see how far our province with this. And then I think what is concerning there is that, I mean, the number in the Western Cape seems to also be increasing. I mean, previously Western Cape was one of the lowest because they've not really been affected as significant as other provinces like Eastern Cape and Gauteng in terms of the contingent liabilities on this claim. But it looks like, I mean, this problem is also spilling over into provinces like the Western Cape. I mean, if you look at 2012, they spent 6.9 million, but now in 17-18, that figure has grown to 86 million on the medical legal claims, which then obviously then a concern for the sector. But I think it's encouraging that the sector itself, I mean, is doing something about this issue with the national leading the process. And in terms of the health, Western Cape Health non-negotiable, trying to break down the 242 million where it comes from. Compensation of employees was underspent by 83 million, and the department indicated that it was savings due to the slow recruitment. And then there was also goods and services that was underspent by 162 million. And some of the items there were medicines and property payments, which relate mainly to maintenance expenditure. And then other than that, I think capital payments did well. That there was a slight over expenditure. And then on goods and services also, there were some savings on items like communication, consultants and travel and subsistence, which also contributed to the under expenditure that we see on goods and services. And moving on to the next slide. The next slide just looks at compensation of employees in aggregate for the sector, 99.3% spent by the Western, 99.3% spent by the Western Cape, and 83 million under expenditure there, but for the sector in total it's 848 million. And then we move on to the next slide. The next slide then looks at the critical health professional headcount and the distribution by provinces. And if you look at the first pie chart, I mean, the first pie chart, in simple terms, what it means is that is the distribution of medical specialists by provinces. What it means is that, I mean, if you've got some sort of an illness that needs a specialized kind of a services, you are likely to leave if you are in the Western Cape and Gauteng, because between the two of them, they share 70% of the total medical specialists that we have in this country, because they also have the five biggest central hospitals. So 70% of the medical specialists are in Gauteng and Western Cape, with Western Cape taking 27% of the total that we have. In terms of the medical practitioners, I think the distribution there is fair. I mean, proportionally, if you look at the population shares and the population of the uninsured. In terms of the table on the right, it just looks at the trend between March 2016-17 to the current financial, I mean, to the 17-18 financial year. In aggregate, I think we are losing these medical specialists. I mean, we've lost between March 2017 and March 2018 about 240 medical specialists from the system, so they left the system. And the biggest number was in the Western Cape. At 245. and some province, rural provinces, which I think perhaps is a good story, like the Western, I mean, Eastern Cape, they would have gained 29 of those, and then three states, 18. But the biggest loser there was the Western Cape, which is a bit of a concern. And in terms of the other slide, the other slide just looks at the various non-negotiables. I think I've already touched on this one, the laboratory services, medical supplies, and property payments, the fact that the department understands. So we'll pass on that slide and then move on to the next slide, which then looks at the HIV and AIDS expenditure at the end of the financial year. So the province spends 99% of that budget for HIV and AIDS, but however, there were offsets, I mean, within certain areas in the HIV and AIDS component. There was an over-expenditure that was incurred under the antiretroviral treatment, but as a result, there was also an under-expenditure, significant under-expenditure on the prevention side, which was on the condoms and on the medical maid circumcision, which was 19 million and 7 million respectively. Moving on to the next slide. So what we tried to do as well, given that there was an under expenditure of 242 million in health, so we tried to see how that under expenditure affects the critical cost centers, which are the hospitals. So we tried to see if whether that under expenditure also affected those cost centers. And the slide that you see there looks at the two central hospitals. So we drill down the expenditure for the two central hospitals, which is the Holiday Sphere and then the Tigerberg. And if you look at there and at the bottom, I mean, it doesn't look like the under expenditure affected those two hospitals, because the Holiday Sphere, there was 101% expenditure. So there was a slight over expenditure of 49 million. And in terms of Tigerberg, it was at 102 million, with a slight over expenditure of 68 million. And in terms of their compensation of employees, they fully spent their budget on compensation of employees. And the next one, we looked at the SEO district hospitals and the normal general hospitals. Also, the same thing happened there. I mean, that expenditure did not affect those areas. The district hospitals, in aggregate, there was a slight over expenditure of 68 million, and the general hospital, it was 64 million. And in terms of compensation of employees, they fully spent their compensation of employees as a budget. Moving on to the next slide, which then looks at the capital payments, Western Cape Health overspent slightly on capital payments, so there were not significant issues there. So they spent 101.7% of their budget relative to the total under expenditure of the sector of 909 million. So they didn't do too bad there. Then in terms of the conditional grants as well. I mean, the three last columns, I mean, we look at the grants of the province that would have spent 90%, and then in the middle one, 90% to 95%, and the last one, above 95%. And if you look there in terms of the Western Cape, there was only one grant that would have spent less than the 90%, which is the health revised, health facility revitalization grant. And all other grants would have spent more than 96% of the allocated budget. And then on this slide, what we did, I mean, there were some areas of concern. I mean, what we did, I mean, over the past week, we've noticed that there's been this much spike on certain conditional grants. And also Western Cape there, I mean, it's one of the provinces where there has been that much spike in the conditional grants. Even though there was 99.3% spent, I mean, if you look at when was some of this expenditure incurred, I mean, I think for us was a concern. I mean, health facilities provide grants, 25% of the total health facilities grant expenditure was incurred in the month of March alone. And then 83% of the HSD, the human settlement grant, was transferred in the month of March as well, hence the huge bar there. So which, and then also in the PRMG, there was also 38% of the total expenditure for the PRMG was also incurred in the month of March, which we see as a concern. I mean, and then it also talks to the issue of planning. And then we also looked at this huge like in the ages, you would try to look at where was this money paid to. So who was the money paid to? And then if you look there, if you look down there, you would see who were the beneficiaries of the March 5. There was the Housing Development Agency, which received 161 million of that total expenditure. I understand that there was also an adjustment of 100 million that was given to the Western Cape, and I think 43 million of that was for the purchase of land with the assistance of the HHDA. But however, nevertheless, the 161 million is still, I mean, it should be explained. And then there was also 292 million that was also paid to municipalities in March, and then the Cape Metro received 91.7 million, and there was also 207 million that was transferred, given paid to various companies. But in general, we were just concerned with this March 5, because the question that then we ask ourselves is that if whether this money has been spent and service delivery has taken place at the end of the day. And then the next slide, we looked at the human settlements. I've already indicated the issue of the mass spike, and then I'll look at the bottom table, which looks at the delivery against what the target was. And in terms of the stage size, only 1% of the target was achieved. In terms of the housing units that were to be built, only 77.4% was achieved, even though there was a 100% expenditure that was recorded. And then in aggregate, only 76.1% of the targets were achieved. Then I'll move on. I'll skip the next slide with the graph, and then I'll move to the slide that looks at the main sub-program or main service delivery sub-program. We looked at how they would have fared at the end of the year. I think what is concerning there, well, that is on slide number 23, and then what's concerning there, I think, I mean, if you look at the even though there was a full expenditure of 99.7% on the total budget for the housing development program. Look at some of the areas like emergency housing. I mean, that would have underspent by 137 million. And then you look at the informal settlement upgrade. I think this was also the issue that we raised in the previous financial year. Informal settlement upgrade underspending by 166 million. Then the integrated residential development program phase one, which then deals with the issue of land servicing, the issue of housing planning, etc., would have underspent by 280 million, but that would have been offset by the phase two, which then deals with the actual construction of the houses, which overspent by 521 million. And then also the people's housing process was also overspent by about 153 million. So it looks like there's been reprioritization among this housing main housing program to try and avert the over expenditure of the vote. And in terms of the infrastructure, the program spent 99.9% on infrastructure, but we also highlighted the issue of the mass spike and also some of the other expenditures on areas like maintenance and repairs in education and then in transport and also some of the health. And in terms of the recommendation, I think the recommendation are just general recommendation. They don't only pertain to the Western Cape, they pertain to the general presentation that we've been making. We think that we recommend that the Select Committee on Finance knows the provincial expenditure, also knows the issues that pertain to education and health, as well as the issue of accruals. We say that they should agree that, I mean, we need to enhance the issue of capacity enhancement, better planning, and also ensure that conditional grants are then fully spent. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, National Treasury. As we've done in the previous meetings, lots of these figures are repeated in the financial presentation as well. So, EBC Minister, you can make your input. Members must make their notes. You but they have the overall picture from the National Treasury. Look at page 20 until page 23. If you are come to make your input, then you can direct to the presentation. We're going to give you 15 minutes. 5-0 to your presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, colleagues and members of the NCOP Select Committee on Finance. It's a great pleasure to be here. And I would also like to thank the committee and the secretariat for the timely notice, and that's why we are all here. We really appreciate it, and there's no budget council meeting, so that's why I'm also here. Thank you for this invitation. Also, Chair and members of this committee, we have left also, Chair, your minutes of the previous meeting that we were here when we met with you in the previous round.
Yeah.
And we've also noted that in your previous minutes when we were here on your minutes of 2020, you recommended that we also, Gauteng and the Western Cape, take into consideration the net immigration in those two provinces as it specifically relates to the budget planning and the budget implementation. So we're particularly happy that we have done that. So we have given effect to that recommendation from this committee, and that is a very serious committee, and we will show you how we've taken that into consideration. Also, Chairperson, I've noted that in your introductory remarks and in the remarks of the National Treasury, you indicated that the fiscal position of provinces has been discussed here, and we will give you some indication of our fiscal strategy. There was also comments about the contingent liability. The presentation will also deal with that, and also the issue of the medical legal claims. My colleagues will deal with that on a substantive matter. This is simply the outline of our presentation. I'm not going to speak to that, but it's the things that you've requested us to do. But what we have added, because we see this engagement between us as the executive and the legislative arm, as the NCOP, we see also this as a learning organization. And what we mean by that is the last point on the agenda. In other words, what are we learning from you, what we are learning from each other together, and how we can move the situation forward. So for us, we ask ourselves, what have we learned through the past 12 months, and what are the further work that is required even in our work, and what are the advice that we get from you so that we can take it back to our engine room when we put up the budget through the budget of ourselves. Briefly, about the next slide that deals with the landscape, that is how we put the budget together. We start normally with the economic intelligence at the provincial and the local municipal level. So we produce two documents, which is called the Provincial Economic Review and Outlook, that gives us provincial intelligence and also municipal economic intelligence, so that municipalities all over the state don't need to appoint. We have 50 municipalities. Now we do all the economic intelligence work. If all those 50 municipalities must appoint consultants to tell them economic intelligence, you can imagine what amount that will be. So we do all that type of work so that we have one standard economic intelligence platform so that we can engage. So when we engage with the municipalities about the budget, we engage with them from one standard economic intelligence. And when they compile their own IDP, they don't need to appoint consultants to produce economic intelligence. That happened with my colleagues here behind me. So that's what we do, the municipal economic review. And when we do that, we take that part to September when we engage with the departmental strategic planning, that becomes part of that engagement with municipalities. So we know municipalities tell us, well, we need a factory in this particular place. We will say, where is that in our economic intelligence, and where is that in your own economic intelligence? So that's very important for us. Then we take to the various engagements. In October, you will see we have a thing called TIME, which is the Technical Integrated Management Engagement with Municipalities, to make sure that the budget was also linked to the budget of the various IDPs in the various municipalities. After that, I have a fiscal policy seminar that I run every year, and I bring the top economists in the country, people from the universities, the Bureau of Economic Research, I bring people from the South African Reserve Bank, even National Treasury is there, the budget office, the South African Reserve Bank, so I use this as a think tank to guide me in terms of fiscal policy. Because the point that you make now is that you assess the fiscal policy strategy. So I use this as a think tank without spending money. I call the National Treasury, I call the Fiscal Financial Commission, I call my own economist, I call the business school, spend no money. And we have a fiscal policy intelligence seminar, and that I use to influence our budget policy decisions that we take to the Cabinet Boursorama, to the MPBBS, and the rest I'm not going to explain. But as we do this, this is part of our planning, formulation, execution, and in that work. So our process, while we sit here, implement the policy, we also review the policy, budget policy cycle. So that's what we do. On the next slide, since you also asked about our economic strategy, I give you an indication of how we develop our strategic plan. Previously, we had 10, 11 strategic goals. The government needs to focus. You mustn't have 10, 20 plans, because then you don't get focus. So we have a focus. We have 5 strategic goals. So with the first goal, we say, nothing is more important in the Western Cape, for that matter in South Africa, than growing the economy and creating jobs. Number 2, you cannot grow the economy if you don't invest in proper education and opportunities for the youth. And you also cannot grow the economy, strategic goal number 3, people are sick. So we focus also on increased wellness, safety, and tackle social ills. Number 4 is also to enable a resilient and sustainable quality environment. And my job in the cabinet is number 5, to make sure that the architecture of good governance is in place. I'm the chairperson of the strategic goal to see that we have proper integrated service delivery through partnership and spatial alignment. So that's the 5 things we are focused. Every cabinet minister chairs that particular thing, and we work day and night to make sure that that is a almost a dogmatic approach to make sure that we are focused. If you have 10, 15, 15 physical objectives, you lose the focus. So what is our fiscal approach, Chair? You've asked us to also look into that. So what we have done is, in terms of our fiscal approach, we've tabled a budget for people, specifically to create public value. When you listen to the National Treasury, you can see what the number one thing that we want to make sure is that we create public value. And talking about creating public value, when we had to make major significant budget cuts, we have specifically decided we're not going to make budget cuts in 3 areas. Number 1, in education, in social development, and in health, because those are frontline service delivery, and I think National Treasury did refer to, we're not cutting frontline service delivery precisely because we want a budget for people to create public value. Our fiscal strategy is also linked to our budget policy principles, which I will discuss shortly. We have developed in this term of office a fiscal strategy. When I tabled the budget, I said to the cabinet, there are 2 big risks that occupy my mind when I put this budget together. It's the water crisis and crime. So when I put this budget together, those were the 2 main things that occupied my mind. Responding to the water crisis and responding also to the issue of safety and the Western Cape. The rest, I think the point that I already made, protect frontline service delivery, education, health and social development, but also focus on the youth, disability and skills development. 160 million rand for skills development over the next 3 years. Disability share, we have made a concerted effort over the next 3 years. 500 million rand we've put aside for persons with disability. Obviously not enough. As a result of the major budget cut this year, the new financial year, we tabled a infrastructure budget for 25 billion. We come out of the previous, this year that we speak now, that was a 28 billion rand infrastructure, because we committed to the government to what we call infrastructure-led growth strategy. And why is that important? That is important because we have the biggest software industry in this province. And you get the biggest software industry in the southern hemisphere, you must make sure that your road infrastructure and the network facilitate the transportation of that software industry. So we're particularly happy that that investment is paying very well off. The next slide gives an indication of the budget spending plans and priorities to make sure that the plans are actually linked to your spending trends. And I'm not going to discuss everything in detail, but you can see it here. On top you will see PSU1, creating opportunities for growth and jobs. So in the Western Cape, we have said there are 3 sectors that have the biggest multiplier effect in terms of jobs. And that is the agro-processing industry, that is the tourism industry, and the third one, agro-processing, tourism, what's the third one? Oil and gas in Fadana with a 9 billion investment in Fadana in terms of the oil and gas. Now this is our very important project, Colisa, means to grow, and those are the 3 major economic. And we also now with Atlantis, we're thankful for DTI and their cooperation with us. We will soon declare together with DTI Atlantis as a special economic zone. A billion rand investment is already earmarked for that particular area to turn that into the biggest renewable energy hub here in the Western Cape. We are already the fastest growing renewable energy in the world, right here in the Western Cape. And that is a result of partnerships with the local municipality, the provincial government, the green economy, and also the national government. So we're particularly happy that that is a growth agenda. Also, lastly, in the bottom, apprenticeship. We are also particularly focused on apprenticeship to target the youth in that specific area. Also, in terms of the agro-processing. People in different parts of the world, they're making more. Western Cape has the biggest Muslim population. Indonesia is the biggest Muslim population in the world, 250 million people. So if you have the biggest Muslim population in the world and Indonesia is your neighbor, the southern hemisphere is 250 million, you must think about that in the context of agro-processing. So our thinking says we need to produce the biggest allowed global agri-park, and that's what we're busy with, because that gives us access to the market of Indonesia and also Malaysia. So that's part of that agenda. Secondly, I'm not going to speak about PhD2, that focus on education. The presentation of NTS alluded to that, and in the further context, we will see some further work. But in the Western Cape, we focus not on getting people to hospitals. We focus now on wellness. People mustn't even go to the hospital. They must, before they go to the hospital, we must look at what are we doing to keep people healthy before they go there. Because you go to the hospital when you're sick. When you're sick, it comes as a threat to the state. So we promote what we call a whole of society approach. We also promote wellness in the situation. But we have some serious challenges in terms of the tackling the social ills, so we cannot be busy with that. I'm not going to speak to the rest. I think that is for people to read, except to say water. PhD4 is very important for us, specifically for the water crisis. Is how do we invest in governance? I'm not going to speak to that, that we can read in the okay, then I would like to just table what we have tabled this year. It's a 52 billion rand budget, and we tabled it as a budget for people, and my colleague will now deal with it. So that is the broader context in terms of how we dealt with what we have done here. It indicates to you the budget policy principle, so that we are apply principles in the budgeting process. The one is constitutionalism. In other words, only do what the constitution says you must do in terms of Schedule 5, exclusive letter to the provincial competent. The constitution is quite clear. What are the provincial exclusive letter to the competent? So that's why we have constitutionalism, the rule of law, evidence-based practice, doing in partnerships, the whole of society approach, focusing on the citizen, but also try to create public value. One of the last principles that we've also now included is innovation. I want to see departments bringing innovation, and when there's an innovation, I want to give them more money to reward. And I think the National Treasury must also take note of that. When there's innovation, they must give you a reward. They mustn't, if there's bad practices, give you a financial recovery grant. I'm opposed to the National Treasury giving you a financial recovery grant when you fail to be in the party. So that's why I brought in innovation. So if there's something happening somewhere in the country, reward those places through innovation. And that's exactly what we do in the West, okay? You bring a new idea, we give you more money. But not when you spend their single budget, you're not going to get more money. I think we can skip this, but this also explains three things. It explains our fiscal strategy. Our fiscal strategy is clear. We must have a balanced budget, we must have proper expenditure management, and we must have revenue management. In that context, we are happy to report to this committee that we have now reached the 3 billion owned revenue. We have also a revenue master class. And I'm particularly happy that also members of this committee, because the more you gamble, we have 4 casinos.
Is it still talking to the one that there?
I recognize also Kerry. Yes, I'm also looking for these 2 pages in the draft.
We have inserted 2 pages. We were happy to provide it to the committee.
It's not in this document.
It's not in that document. It's just the fiscal strategy, because you alluded to it, and the budget policy principle. We're happy to make those 2 copies during the course of the meeting.
Thank you.
So I will now leave it to the college chair to deal with the technical stuff. But during the year under review, we have to shift major budgets to deal with the water, the drought, and the fires you will report today. We have to involve Section 25 of the Public Finance Management for that in this period under review for the fires in Nyasa. And we have to deal with that, and we have to make money available in terms of that Section 75 of the Public Finance Management. So it was also part of this, but the colleagues will explain in detail the technical details. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Excuse me, the Bumble Tara can we take the chair? Keep up with it. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Minister Mayor, I'm going to take that to wait for the government. Use this economic intelligence to provide an objective review and analysis of recent costs as well as estimated future economic information and growth, as well as an overview of socioeconomic information, which informs our fiscal and budget policy formulation process. The purpose of this slide, slide 9, is to give you a, in a nutshell, all of the most important economic as well as socioeconomic indicators that influence the decision making of regards to our fiscal and budget policy formulation. The GDP growth and an estimate for 2017 was at 0.7%. However, this will change a little bit later this afternoon as the first quarter 2018 GDP data will be released as well. For example, we're also showing you the population of the Western Cape as in 2017, which was at 6.5 million, and an unemployment rate of about 19.7% for quarter one in 2018. All of the information that you see here, you'll also see in the Municipal Economic Review and Outlook of 2017, the Provincial Economic Review and Outlook of 2017, those are our internal publications as the Provincial Treasury. And then there's also the rest of the information as per the Labour Force survey will come from SAT-SA. If you move on to the next slide, in terms of our socio-economic development within the Western Cape, there has been improvements in a number of areas, specifically the systemic test scores in the industry pass rate. HCI also improved due to some investment by government in infrastructure as well as social services. There has been the basic service provision is also relatively high with water quality and electricity supply satisfactory. Life expectancy as well as maternal and child mortality rates are also declining. There is also an increase in patients receiving ARVs in the Western Cape. However, HIV does still remain the second leading cause of death in the province after diabetes. And then we also have certain challenges with regards to the socio-economic development, which include crime and substance, just to mention a few. If we move on to the next slide, a summary of key economic factors that are influencing or impacting on the Western Cape includes the increased population size as well as the rising fiscal pressure that's coupled with an increased demand in services with more people that you have to service. So even though we have seen a number of improvements on the socioeconomic front, the subdued economic performance as well as the subdued outlook has adversely affected the pace of the socio-economic development that we have in the province. Minister Mayor also indicated the drought and the water crisis, which continues to be a major risk, and it does impact three sectors, agriculture, tourism, and construction, with agriculture being impacted the hardest. And then there's also a number of risks that come from, that emanate from the water crisis, and that includes the inability to provide basic services, impacting on businesses, the deterioration of socioeconomic conditions, as well as an increased reliance on the social safety net. We can, however, indicate that there is improved investor sentiment, and this has led to some improvement in business confidence. However, the drought and the water crisis has remained our biggest challenge. With regards to the Western Cape approach to economic development, we are taking a very holistic approach, and we are focused on a more integrated and more coordinated approach to our planning and budgeting towards economic development. We promote economic intelligence as I previously indicated. The PERO and the MERO are some of the evidence-based documents that we use, evidence-based practice. Infrastructure growth continues to be a key focus within the province. We continue to focus on inclusive, sustainable, as well as smart growth, while developing key skills to match the demand in the economy. Public sector procurement can also be leveraged to stimulate local activities, and then we try to maintain and promote investor confidence. Business confidence is always key to investment, and this could lead to improved competitiveness as well as subsequent economic and employment growth. And then we also take a spatial approach to our regional economic development and this is it. That will require a differentiated approach. The last slide speaks to the point on implementing our key economic growth strategy. Minister Mayor indicated PSG1, which is creating opportunities for growth and jobs, and that Project Kuluza focuses on agriculture, fishing, tourism, as well as oil and gas. There are a number of priority projects that relate to those three areas. The first three sub-bullets deal with that. For example, the halal export promotion that we spoke about, the halal industrial park, the halal certification project, and the wine and brandy export promotion as part of agricultural seeding. With regards to oil and gas, the industrialization of the West Coast with the Saldana Bay Island Deck, and in terms of various tourism initiatives, I'm not going to go through all of them, but it's, one of them is the securing of direct flights to or air routes via to Cape Town via a number via the air access project. Then there are also a number of green economy promotion projects, promoting investor confidence, which relates to the project Budo project, and that's aggressively marketing the city of Cape Town as well as the Western Cape as an inspiring as well as safe place to do business. The ease of doing business strategy, the infrastructure to grow, which focuses on investment made in roads and transport as well as broadband infrastructure, reliable and affordable public transport, and then also the apprenticeship game changer, which provides qualified apprentices into the labor market. So far, 1,100 donors have received work readiness training, including 250 artisanal learners. Thank you very much.
Some of the my colleagues will understand the
My colleague Ronal has given you the socioeconomic conditions in terms of the factors we take into consideration when we put the budget together. As Minister indicated, that was one of the requests from the committee. I'm going to take you now through the numbers which speak mostly to the National CD presentation. Myself, I will try not to repeat what National CD said, but also try to complement and give you some context in terms of those numbers. But before we go into the numbers always tell a story, but the story I think is in a context. So I think for 17-18 for the Western Cape province, it's important for you to understand the context of 2017-18 in which these numbers that I'm going to speak about happen. So firstly, in terms of recostal, I think it's the first time, city adjusted budget in one financial year, and that is not because we couldn't get the budget correct. That is just because of the conditions we were facing. So firstly, in June, we had this fire breakout, as the Minister indicated, in Haifa. And then at the same time, within the same week, in other areas of our province, we actually had in terms of some damage, in terms of the storm that also happened in between the 4th and 7th of June. Different parts of the province, if you remember, we actually had to close schools for a couple of days in June. And schools actually bore the brunt of the storm in terms of roots and those kind of things that in terms of that blew off. So that happened in June, and we made a part of Section 25, which also in terms of an adjustment budget so that we can actually have emergency funding to respond to the situation on the ground. And then in terms of November, we had the normal adjustment budget process as per the national budget process, and then we started to look at the drought specifically, and in terms of trying to respond to the drought immediately for 17-18, but also asking the department to reprioritize their budget simultaneously towards the responding towards the budget. So you ask in terms of what that would actually mean. So for example, on an infrastructure side, in terms of your school, then you need to make sure that you need to become water resilient and schools that can operate going forward. What does that mean? We need to make sure that there's boreholes at certain schools or areas that for schools and hospitals that they can continue services. So that took a prioritization in November regarding infrastructure budget, which explains some of the changes that the National Treasury indicated during the adjustment. You see the shift that we had within maintenance and capital, exactly reprioritizing the budget in terms of responding to that. Then lastly, in terms of March, we passed a third adjustment estimate, and that is because we were one of the lucky departments to receive, or lucky provinces to receive some funding from the Human Development Grant, 100 million, which was a reallocation from other provinces, and therefore we passed a third adjustment. I think it's important in terms of us understanding in terms of the context, which will explain some of the numbers that you're going to see in front of you. Then lastly, also we want to say to you that the numbers that we are quoting, as long as we remember, is in terms of at a particular date, so this is a snapshot, and the numbers have subsequently changed because these numbers is preliminary. It has not taken final vitamins into account, neither has it taken clearing of the expense account into account as well, and so I'll even show you an example how numbers have changed and what it actually looks like at a different snapshot closer to that. I'll show you in terms of how that changes with me. This one is in the back of our mind. So, I'm now, there was a mouthful, but I'm now on slide 16, and I'm taking you through the own revenue. One of the requests from the committee was to explain in terms of own revenue, how the outcome they are, and in terms of explaining some of the things. So, own revenue in the Western Cape is also very important, as Minister indicated, in terms of incentivization. We have an incentivization policy regarding own revenue, and it goes as follows. The more departments can collect in terms of their own revenue, they can keep that as part of their budget. So you collect, you spend what you collect. And therefore you have to set yourself a budget target, and that gets appropriated. And then also, so that means in terms of that if you set your target at 100 million, that means for 17-18, you can spend 100 million on condition that you collect. If you do not collect the 100 million, you must underspend by the amount you do not collect. It's a bit different in the Western Cape than most of the majority of the other provinces, but it is based on incentivization. So when we look at our own revenue, and this is important for us in terms of the minister says that we get 3 billion in terms of own revenue, it is starting from a very low base previous year, so we now will be at 3 billion then for us to understand. So in terms of the justice budget for 17-18, the target that we set ourselves to collect as a collective was 2.6 billion rand. We collected 3.1 billion rand, and of that 3.1 billion rand, it was 2.4 consists in terms of without, in terms of the patient fee. They collected 567 million rand. You'll see that also in terms of provincial treasures, that's 604 million rand. That is in terms of the gambling board, in terms of collections. I'll give you some more details coming up in the next slide. And then you'll also see in terms of collections in transport and public works, so 1.7 billion rand is in terms of the motor vehicle license. So this time on slide 17, you see some narrative in terms of, like I said, the motor vehicle license is in transport and public works. And the driver here is really in terms of the increase in the motor vehicle population and that in terms of an increase in the motor vehicle licensing tariffs as well. In terms of the health, that is really on par with the previous financial year, especially the department's collection on health patient fees is concerned. What the department has is set aside targets to be included administrative fees, other administrative fees besides health patient fees that is it has improved on this financial year. And then the breakdown of the provincial treasury regarding revenue of the 604 million I mentioned, the senior taxes are at 537 million, and then both rating contributed about 54 million towards that own business. Now there are some challenges. Obviously when you take a budget, there's always some challenges and risks you have to take into consideration. Slide 18 then shows you in terms of planning the consideration, when we put it in the 17 budget together, we need to just check ourselves the target of 2.6 billion rand, what we have to take into account, which would have an effect on the collection of own revenue, and that is in terms of a myriad of reasons. Number one, as I mentioned by my colleague as well, is the lower than expected economic growth over the medium term. We have to take that into consideration. We also need to take into consideration the plateau of gambling taxes, especially in terms of maturing of the gambling industry, as well as pressure on household disposable income, and then also in terms of the own revenue, a source of own revenue, is also debt that is owed to government departments that get paid, and therefore also the reduction on containment of debt would also have an impact therefore on own revenue that is collected. When we look at slide 19, in terms of the overall expenditure now for the province, indicating the expenditure per department, including the provincial parliament, as well as indicating the economic classification. So of an adjusted budget of 59, and the 59.8 billion is after the city adjustment budget that I spoke about. We spent 31 billion rand on COE. You can see that is our biggest spender, and then in terms of different services, we spent 12.9 billion. Transfers and subsidies about almost 10 billion rand. Payment for capital assets, 4.7 billion rand. Payment for financial assets, 28 billion, with a total expenditure of 59.1 billion rand. That is with the 706 underspending as indicated by the National Treasury in their presentation. And you can see in terms of percentage spend, that was 98.8% as mentioned by them. Moving along in terms of some of the departments in terms of health, it was indicated that 232 million were underspending by health, and that is mainly on compensation of employees, quite like vice issued by National Treasury, as well as in terms of maintenance in terms of the facilities management in terms of infrastructure. I'll give you some more details. It was the after some detail on our communication that will still be coming in slides. And then on the vegetation side, 160 million rand, also on COE, and then also on in terms of infrastructure understanding, in terms of transport and public works, there's in terms of roads, in terms of some of the road projects, as well as in terms of public works maintenance projects, that was understand. The Department of the Premier, the 38 million rand understanding that indicated there is a combination of COE understanding, but also understanding on computer services, and that is in terms of the total budget of our broadband project lies within the Department of the Premier under our Center for Innovation, our IT department. And so they, in terms of, they were experiencing a knock-on effect in terms of the implementation of broadband in terms of phase one. Regarding phase one is in terms of putting the actual fiber in the ground, and that took longer than was expected. And had a knock-on effect on the rest of the project. In terms of the treasury, the understanding on both the compensation of employees and of the consultants on in terms of the business services. And in local government, the 15.9 million rand understanding, additional money was given for local government to do adjustment estimates when we look at the draft, especially in the November adjustment estimate. And the reason, one of the reasons given as part of the draft is the fact that when you have a draft, we always think we assume that there might be an increase in the risk was greater that we will have more fires in the province. And as you know, we're one of the provinces known for the fires. And therefore, the fire season did not end up the way we thought about it, and that is also indicating in terms of some of the understanding and local government that we will see. So we did not get as much claims for fires as we expected at the end of the financial year. Moving along to some of the economic classification of the committee requested and the work on compensation of employees. Now, I looked at this presentation last year that we presented, and we did a few slides on explaining how we try to control and in terms of our fiscal consolidation strategy as part of our budget in terms of legislating the COP budget of departments. So 17-18 was the same as in 16-17, when we legislated and limited the COP budget. And that actually meant that departments could not increase or decrease the COP budget without going to the legislature, without us passing an adjustment budget. So that is one of the control mechanisms that we put in place in terms of like a leverage or in terms of fiscal consolidation. And therefore that actually meant that when there is underspending at the end of the financial year on COE, departments could not use that for other purposes. What we're trying to do, number one, is that we're trying to reduce the rate of increase of our COE budget, number one. But we're also trying to make sure that the departments in terms of the COE as a resource, and therefore in terms of every time there is a vacancy within a department, it does not mean that vacancy must be replaced. We're putting our departments in a position to say in terms of how does this resource fit into the strategy and my APT that I have going forward. Do I still require this resource or is the, in terms of more pressing issues, the service in that way that is required. So what we try to do is a change of behavior from where CLT is concerned and we apply our strategy. We believe that we are halfway there, if not further there in terms of achieving our strategy, or what the numbers show you on slide 22. So in terms of the previous slide also showed you that in terms of a budget of 31.6 billion rand with CLT, which is about 53% of our budget, we spend 31.4 billion rand. With a saving of 239 million rand. When we look at the middle column that shows in terms of head count, so as we actually also try to control the head count, we've increased our CLT by 503 heads. And when we look at where those increases occur, 375 was in education, health at 86, and social development at 26. So that actually social development in terms of the social is really working. So for us in terms of frontline services, in terms of what the budget strategy was, we maintain that retail that in terms of we are containing the CLT budget. Just in terms of clarification, I must also indicate we would ask if our budget was done with different from what National Treasury has indicated to you. So that's not, we're not achieving the numbers of National Treasury. National Treasury still sees in terms of which does not, for example, in health, take the sectional doctors into account. So the sectional doctors for us in our tertiary hospital, in terms of where the doctors in terms of our specialists are employed by the university, and we actually take part of the time. And that also is to add as a head count to our numbers, and we're not achieving national treasury numbers, but I would have seen a bit more than this, because we take the sessional doctors into account, which also would explain to you from the health perspective in terms of the minors, which is not a medical specialist. So that does not actually mean that we actually had those number of medical specialists leave the province. It just means that they got paid from a different perspective in terms of our sessional sectional training, in terms of our pass out system. Yes, it does take some understanding, I agree with you, for education, we have a breakdown of our 160 million as indicated by National Treasury, and in terms of redefining, in terms of overspending as indicated, the CLT is at 83 million, system services, the net effect is 88 million grand in terms of underspending, and then of which items, in terms of the overspending, you can see in agency and support services, the agency and support services is the overspending on the National Nutrition Program, and that is mainly due to the increase in the cost per meal. And one of the increases, obviously, in the cost per meal is in terms of food inflation, so you see the 21 million rand increase there as well. In terms of the learner teacher material support, 12 million as indicated, and then in terms of that, understanding has been related to the overspending between transfers and subsidies. As indicated of the norms and the Norwegian standards. Just as I indicate, the maintenance of understanding in education, you will see under property payments, so the maintenance falls under property payments, and one of the reasons for the maintenance understanding is in terms of, as I spoke about, that reprioritization of projects that need to happen in order for us to respond to the driving activity in terms of the repairs and upgrading of boreholes and water recirculation for schools. Moving along to the education recap now, on page 26. In terms of the education recap, we see in terms of when we started the financial year, we were sitting at 40,000, just over 40,000 what is within the education, and then in terms of the public staff was about 8,500, and educators were at about 32,000. At the end of the year, the movement that we've seen in the last column there, 375, as I indicated in the previous slide, to give a breakdown. The increase is in terms of actual new teachers that joined the Western State Education Department at 284. Of the 284, 48 of them were for internships in these posts, and others were permanent posts. And that is in terms of responding in terms of the increase in migration of learners. In terms of slide 27, I also remember the outcome as of 31st of March is indicated at 232 million rand. And when you look at the currency on women's data, in terms of as we take journals into account, the understanding is about 193 million. So that understanding has come down. Where the understanding is found is on health revitalization in terms of maintenance and infrastructure projects, and in terms of compensation of employees within health, which is almost about 80 million. So the understanding in terms of compensation of employees in health, I think it's important for the community as a country to understand what is happening in the Western Cape health at the moment. The Western Cape health has a management efficiency and alignment project, which is called MEET. This project is essentially in terms of redesigning and realigning the department on health regarding wellness, as the minister indicated in the slides, and this is in terms of making sure that we actually deal with the population that is well, more than a population that is sick. And you can understand we need to steer a ship as big as ours that consists of 400 institutions. You actually need to go through in terms of a process, and the process is taking 18 months to do so. So they evaluate every post. When a post becomes vacant, they actually evaluate that according to the new redesign and the new strategy that they're trying to employ before they make their decision just to fold the post. So that has a lag time in certain institutions, especially at head office level, in terms of whether the question whether we still need that post in our new strategy, which has now resulted in the understanding of the community. Then in terms of the pressures within health, the pressures shown in within health in terms of its different services, you see that these in terms of medical supplies is about a 2% pressure, they spend 2% more than their budget. In terms of laboratory services, and this is in terms of the degree of assistance that they have to apply more lab tests, that's about 4% more than what was budgeted. And then the property payments, you'll see that they've only spent 96% of their budget. That again is in terms of infrastructure and maintenance that falls under property payments regarding required payments. Claims against the state from the Western Cape compared to everybody else, it is in terms of on a very low base. In terms of our payments, as indicated in 17-18, our payment expenditure has increased and has been more than it has been in previous years. The reason for this is number one is also timing that we need to understand. So the timing of the final resolution of cases. So the cases can go over many financial years, but the final data is that it's very difficult to indicate in terms of when a case will be finalized and therefore when a payment needs to be made. And to find that in terms of a balanced budget for it, when it's going to happen, is actually quite difficult. So number one is timing is an issue in terms of budget. But we do agree that this is the highest amount we've paid in the last 7 years. But it's a combination of timing of projects over the last 4 years of the council to finalization, but also in terms of receiving the claims against the state of what is happening in other provinces, that there is more claims that is coming to the Western Cape. In terms of our infrastructure, we spend 98% of our infrastructure as indicated. Overall, in terms of our social infrastructure, is 96.6%, and then our economic infrastructure is it's a budget. When you look at our cash, position, you see in terms of the cash position at 5.6 billion rand, the commitment that we have against that, and that's always important to see the full picture, not only in terms of the cash that we have in the bank, but also in terms of the commitment that we have against that, and we take all our commitments into consideration that the end of the deficit of 62 million has a risk that the provincial revenue fund is carrying. And then when we look at our debt accruals, unauthorized and irregular expenditure, accumulated debt, you'll see that the accumulated debt has increased on the margin from 1.3 billion in March 2017 to 1.4 billion in March 2018. And then also in, sitting at majority of that is sitting within health and in terms of transport and public work. That would be in terms of your motor vehicle license debt in terms of transport and public work, and then also in terms of your health agency. Having said that, it is accumulated debt, so it's not in 1 year, it has been accumulated over time. The slides that we all give you a breakdown in terms of what kind of debt the 1.4 billion rand is made up of, and so you see there, right at the bottom, health vacancy is 600 and 36 million, motor vehicle license is 402 million, total and salary, other debt is 178, and then in terms of ex-employees and training recoverable, other debt is 134 million, making up those totals. Slide 55 and 36 is in terms of each department, what is the driver in terms of those debt. When you go to slide 37, you see it's blank, it's unauthorized, that is because there has not been reported in the effective in the financial year. Moving along to departmental approvals, you see in terms of payables within 30 days at 499 million rand, plus 30 days is at 19 million rand, which is but more than 1.5% of our budget overall, 589 million in terms of our overall debt, overall approvals, which is about 9.9% of the budget on the irregular. It stands at 86 million then, which is 0.1% of our budget, and the total breaking down to you per department, as well as fixtures and wasteful expenditure. The last column on slide 46 tells you that there's 15,000 there in this waiting for resolution within the government. Finally, so on a final slide here, in terms of lessons learned and further work as required in terms of the medical sense. And one of the things in terms of what we've learned about lessons learned, the lessons over the 17, 18 years, because it's now the integration of our management approach of strengthening the alignment between planning, between budgeting and implementation across departments, but within the municipal space is very important in terms of service delivery. It also puts us in a position when we face 17-18, number one, to be more responsive, but also to be resilient in our responsiveness. And then also in terms of the utilization of our COE as a lever for fiscal consolidation, we think that that has changed the outlook of how COE is used and seen in the province. And in our further work is the fact that the 2018 budget speech regarding the drought has set aside 100 million for immediate funding for the current financial year, and we have also requested through the National Disaster Management Center. Then, in terms of our governance, we do believe there is an opportunity to create certainty regarding the classification reform of transfer payments and the impact it has on government service delivery model going forward. And then lastly, in terms of debt, there is always room for improving the prevention and the collection of debt. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dean. I'm Dr. Mayer. Say a last word before we go to questions.
Yes, Chair. Firstly, let me just make one or two last comments. I think one of the things that we try to focus specifically in this year under review before the committee is what we call domestic resource mobilization, and we will continue to look at other sources of own revenue, as you have already mentioned in this committee, and as the National Minister in the Budget Council has made a remark that we need as provinces to increase our own local revenue to the extent that it is possible. Secondly, you will see that throughout the presentation we are very focused on the COE. We have put strict measures in place, and that measures will now save us as we go forward into the current financial year. We don't allow departments to just simply fill any vacancies. We are, there are committees in place. We are monitoring the committees. We have put COE ceilings. They have to come to the provincial treasury to determine whether they ask to lift that particular ceiling, and the answer is normally no, because we are very determined to manage the ceiling of the wage bill. Also, Chair, the current wage negotiations that is currently taking place will have a major impact on all the provincial governments and the national government as we go forward, and hence we have anticipated that, and this particular presentation is specifically designed to see to what extent we can deal with the future wage bill as we go forward in the new year. Lastly, Chair, we have not factored completely in the 1% VAT increase on the budget, and I think that will have a major impact on all the provincial governments, and I think this committee must also note that the 1% VAT increase will have a significant impact on particularly education, ICT procurement, and also education. Just simply give you an indication on the health, on the health budget alone, it will have in the region the VAT increase, 1% will have a 180 million impact on the budget of the Western Cape. So these are matters that we are taking into consideration as we go forward in the next MCAS cycle. But thank you for this opportunity, Jim.
Thank you to the team from Western Cape. This committee made itself very clear when we presented the report on the fiscal framework and revenue proposals in March. I think it was the 7th of March, more correctly. So there's an assignment from Cabinet to the Minister of Finance regarding the VAT issue, as well as a recommendation from this committee to the Minister of Finance on the VAT issue, which is a serious matter, and I think that will be coming up in the budget to Gotla later in August. Honourable members, questions? I noted Honourable St. Blanche and then Honourable Mr. Mundy. Yes, Honourable Kangu, Honourable Eshak, in that order, both Honourable Monakedi and Honourable Montlachuk. Fine, in that order, members, please proceed. Dr. Blanche, Mundy, Shivangu, Esra, Monakedi,
Montlachuk. Yes, Mr. Thank you for the opportunity. I think, you know, in the main, they have answered, you know, my concerns, you know, while we were dealing with the presentation from that and clearly. But I think there's still a few things that I want to know. You know, I'm starting with the maintenance and repairs again, you know, capital works and stuff like that. It is not as serious as we have seen in other provinces, but, you know, I'm just asking, you know, what is the main reason for the underspending? Is it implementing agents or, you know, where is this coming from? What is the position? How can it be possibly addressed to, you know, to alleviate that a bit? Then secondly, that was also explained, the medical claims, if you look at the figures, then obviously you tend to get concerned. And I just want to know whether there's anything else that can be done, maybe in terms of procedures and how people are going about, you know, the execution of their responsibilities that can possibly be addressed to manage that further down. Then, and this is just a question, I think that is very a pertinent question in the Western Cape. The water long-term plan, I just want to get confirmation that that is now properly, you know, folded into, you know, long-term planning and budgeting. And then the last thing is really an observation, and the Minister did touch on that, is the transport issue in the Western Cape and specifically in Cape Town itself. I think we will agree, and I want to say this in our time, South Cape, the province has appeared, And Mr. Minister, I don't know where you're going to get the money from, but this is really a serious issue. And I mean, you being a financial man, you know, we do understand this stuff, that we need to get something sorted out in terms of public transport in Cape Town. And my question is, sir, if you can just maybe tell us, you know, about your plans that you have in mind. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the team. The constitutionalism principle there, part of it places demand on service delivery. And obviously governing and having to give expression to the obligation of service delivery. I think it's, in my observation, for finance people, places a serious honor. To positively respond. I'm saying so, Chair, because I'm sure the minister will clarify, but I see a disjunction on the plan, on the implementation, the controls that are in place, or strategies of control that are in place, versus the constitutionalism principle. Particularly when you're supposed to deliver. For instance, the reason that is given for understanding on the COE is slow recruitment. Right? It's just that they didn't use, the team didn't use the term that National Treasury used. That the reason that is given for understanding is a slow recruitment, but they do confirm the fact that they don't just fill the phones, they savings and this is not said that on its own it would need a bit of detail in terms of then what is the impact then if they. The principle of constitutionalism that includes placing a demand for service delivery to the people that need that service delivery. And that goes then when you then understand on revitalization of hospitals, which is also evident on the principle. To get the views there, and then and whether this strategy going forward, and I'm not advocating for that, let's just spend or let's just employ for the sake of the group. How do they balance? How do they try to balance? Secondly, is then a clarity, Chair, seeking for some detail on the actual action or program or plan for the objective on they saying that the team is saying that they are now doing wellness. Focusing on wellness. So, what is? Sometimes we good at terminology and terms, and in actual, in what we do, what structural, what do we do? If you don't spend on the structures, hospital or health sector. Facility and services are not spent, but your objective is wellness. So, are we taking everybody to gym? We're running campaigns on walking like President Ramaphosa every morning. We form, you know, running gyms. What do we do when we say we're now focusing on and placing an emphasis on wellness of the people? Because when you take me out of my informal regiment and go train, what is, all of these things go with outreach, campaigns, what is the actual thing, actual structure for that to take place? And then, Chair, I might have missed it, obviously, I rely on my listening skills, mental processes. I might have missed it, but in the presentation of treasure, they refer to non-negotiable. When one of the aspects there that they raise is the property rights and the understanding there. And sir, can we just get the state of affairs in the province in terms of where lies the problem? Are the municipalities not ready? Are the departments defaulting? So what is the actual issue there in terms of the property rates and the negotiable and the international project presentation? And then alongside that as well, in the presentation, one of the slides from the National Treasury, and I seem to have missed from the provincial team the actual response on the concerns in the concern slide, which talks to the spike. They use the term spike on conditional grant, and they cited the transactions made and or payments made in March, in 1 month. I think we do need a specific kind of tangible response. It might be there somewhere in the presentation of the provincial team. I don't know, I missed it, but it would be better to really focus on that one and re-highlight it if it was highlighted. Thank you, Chair, for now.
Thank you, Mr. Shabangu. Yeah, thank you, Chair. Let me also accept that the presentation was very good. But I would have concerned with regard to some of the questions. My critique is concerned because the National Treasury has a concern with regard to health sector and education. What is your input in the budget? Then the Western Cape was the best in the world with hard done classification during the times of the late of Captain Party. Are you still number one or you have lost? I never had to make mention of it. We have also lost medical specialists. Why are they leaving? Is it because of poor incentives? Are they looking for lucrative salaries? Is it because of your understanding with regard to the department? With regard to transportation of patients, are you using the service provider? If yes, how does this affect the workers and the system is lying?
in the free state they do not the so-called Ushele. Your Leonard Chisa, did you hear me say the... Yes. Your Leonard Chisa ratio is of much concern. Whereas on the other hand, we have too much part-time teachers. And basic service providers remain high. You don't mention human settlement and infrastructure, especially places where blacks are serving. What is the challenge? Your contractors also contribute to your understanding. How do you deal with them if they fail to deliver? Last but not least, 150 million underspending calls for concern. What measures do you put in place in order to help this? Do you intend harvesting water for future use? If yes, just put measures in place. Lastly, the nationwide corruption of Leonard's drivers that is paid at the traffic department in order for the learners to acquire their license, how does this affect your province in terms of corruption? Thank you.
Morning, Chairperson. Yeah, great. Thank you for the opportunity. It's always great to have the Richmond Cape present to the Commission. Chairperson, a lot has already been said, so, and I don't plan to give a speech like some of my other colleagues, so I'll be concise, brief, quickly. National Treasury. National Treasury is like... Chairperson, thanks. National Treasury's presentation was great. Slide 4, National Treasury alluded to the CAPEX, that is the capital expenditure regarding the construction and procurement delays. Obviously, I assume the province has taken note of this, but maybe you just want to briefly just expand in terms of your action plan on that. Quick fix on the compensation of employees from a business point of view, I think great job. The reduction of another 205 personnel. So obviously, slide 8, I noticed the Western Cape's bachelor pass rate was the best of some 40.9% specific to bachelor pass. And I'm looking at the slide compared to the other provinces. So obviously something's going right there, but nevertheless there are some concerns from colleagues. National Treasury's slide 10, this was interesting, that is on the payment trends on claims against the state. I'd like to highlight, as National Treasury has highlighted, that there seems to be a huge matter of concern. If you look at the spike in terms of the claims that has somewhat from 2012-2013 or quadrupled, if you look at as compared to 2017-18. I don't know what is the crux of the problem, but perhaps you could express yourself there. And then on the hospital issue, on the, like on the critical health professionals, headcount and distribution, there's like 3 here. A colleague of mine did bring up the health issue. We lost some 245 medical specialists, which is a matter of concern. And then other issues were raised. I will not want to duplicate that, or the union federal instrument issue, the issue of education was raised. I will not duplicate that, Chairperson. And then finally, Chairperson, one small question here on the presentation. I noticed on other tools, on slide 16 specifically, The last column, local government, were you referring to your own revenue income? Now, the percentage collected of the adjusted budget was some 2,000%. Now, the question arises under local government, slide 16, the last column. What are you doing right there? What is so rocket science about this? That, I mean, you've had such a fantastic collection rate. I'd just like to hear the motivation behind that. Obviously, this is really real. If so, what is it that you can tell us to maybe guide, advise, as far as the other provinces are concerned, so that we could also maybe improve that? Gentlemen, I'm going to stop there, and I thank you for the opportunity. Thank you.
That's a very long story, sir.
The other table raising the questions, I will engage with the Western Cape on the collection of patient fees. I'm going to go on a kiddie.
My two questions, Chair, and firstly to thank the team for the presentation, which were indeed very clear. And secondly, to also appreciate and congratulate the working team in terms of how they go about putting together this budget for provincial and municipal economic development and housing, which then also basis for planning, for budgeting, and the full I thought I should comment on that one. And then, thirdly, with regards to the issue of underspending, as far as the conversation of is concerned, I think you have been able to explain how this comes about. But I want to check as to whether this is not having a negative impact on service delivery out there. How do you make sure that your balance? You are thinking in such a way that at the end of the day, service delivery and government still continue, especially in areas such as being marginalized or when marginalized historically. And also, especially for national socialism, with regards to the issue of medical specialists. The Western team, I think, was able to explain why the numbers are as have been presented. But I want to check with national treasury as to whether there is anything that is being done to make sure that those provinces that are disadvantaged in the local team are actually treated so that they are also able to have the number, I think the number can be equal to what is available in the housing, but that gives the national government as well as the ability to make sure that people in those provinces are able to answer this particular special, what do you call them, extra specialists in their own area, or they're using their own provinces. Claims against the state. Of course, one of the explanations is that these are claims that arise from a period of about 7 years or so. But it might also be that people of late are more aware of their rights, they are now starting to assert their rights, you know. If they feel that things have done by the department, they are now making sure that they go to their lawyers, they go to wherever, to get necessary information. Did you look at this angle as well? And if so, I mean, what measures are you taking in place to make sure that, in fact, these things do not arrive in the first place? I think that the slide that is blank dealing with an unauthorized expenditure. Congratulations for that.
I think there are most provinces that are trying to only have an agency. So I thought I should commend you on that one as well. I think there is a special economic zone for Atlantic that is supposed to be declared. It has been in the open for quite some time. I just want to get an update as to how far that process is. If there are challenges, what those challenges are. Thank you very much.
Umbrella motor shipping.
I am here Bharat to a person. I'm interested too much with understand. You understand also all local government on the basis. So, to the tune of 16.9 million. Now, these issues of understanding, first to me, you have a 5-year strategic plan. You have the medium term strategic framework. And you have your ATP. What is it that is a challenge? Is it planning? Is it execution? Which is implementation in this instance? Chairperson.
Slide 21.
Yeah, it was on slide 21. on the national treasury presentation, page 23. Are we all there? All right. I am a little bit worried. You know, if you look at Cape Town is a wonderful city, the mother city. And Comrade Jaleel has kept it very clean and well managed, and she must be congratulated. A patriot, Honorable Jaleel has done well in talking about the things of the organization in the ship that she's here. She must be congratulated, Honorable Elkar. I don't have problems with how you are dealing with your internal issues, not dealing with
now,
you know, on page 23, you are understanding on imaging how informal settlements are created. RDG phase 1. You know, these are issues that affect the previously disadvantaged black community. And as I travel to Langa, I'm not from Yam, from the northwest province. As I go just two kilometers away, and this is Langa, and see how people are crowded, and people are not allocated land. They are not allocated houses, and we see this understanding. It becomes a crisis, and it must be explained as to why in those areas we have a situation where there is understanding. People are there, beneficiaries. Well done in your unauthorized expenditure. You need to be congratulated. But of course, we must think that there's an irregular expenditure. In the previous office, there's an under-expenditure. 474. There's under-expenditure in community days. Yes, irregular expenditure, irregular, not under, community page is 1.181. Social development, 77. It's alarming. You have your social development at 3.1. your agriculture 119 and your economic development in your different department, Honorable Hepa. Now, these are serious issues that concern our institution, our department, our province, the regular expenditure. If we see it, we see red light. And that must be attended to. Equally, your fruitless and wasteful expenditure. If you could explain the premier office again. Though minimal, but you need to clarify, very minimal, but you need to clarify. There is fruitless and wasteful expenditure. You go to your health. That else? From education. Seven. And then your agriculture. I get worried when the school test extend and wasteful extend, even if it's one. It needs an explanation as to why you have a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The last point that I think is important is a matter of national importance. we agree on that, that the debt increase is a very serious issue, sensitive, and it impacted, it is impact on on people. But we said as the governing party that there must be a basket of items that affect the poor that must be zero rated. And therefore we should not create an impression that this will negatively impact on the poor, because we are saying let there be an investigation and an inclusive approach in terms of what is it that is used by poor people that would accommodate them to have those items zero rated. And we are moving in that direction. And we are still engaging on the issue of the debt increase. And we must imagine that it is for 21 years that it was not increased, and it was not the democratic government that introduced debt. Debt was there. And many, many progressive organizations stood against the introduction of debt when it was introduced in this country. But now, after 21 years, we are saying, to remedy the situation in the fiscal positions that the country finds itself, we need the doctor talked about it. No, you don't understand these issues at all. Now, I was clarifying this issue so that it should not be only one side. We must clarify our position as government as to why we have that situation. Thank you very much. And Edward, you must learn.
Thank you. Thank you, all the members. Yes, we appreciate this presentation. And as members said, we will acknowledge where there is progress. We will acknowledge where there is excellence. This committee will do that. It's also this committee's approach that provinces must learn from each other. What are you doing well to increase your patient fees collection?
doing something that you would elaborate on. Your accruals, what is your action plan to address your accruals of 589.6 million rand? And then your understanding of 12.3 million rand on learner teacher support materials. Why? Why that understanding? Just unpack it to us. Thank you. Minister, you and your team can reply. I want to adjourn this meeting at 12:30. I'm called to another meeting of the chamber.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to members of the committee. I will only answer matters before the committee of a technical nature. Those matters that have a political matter, I will leave that to the politicians. I am now a ministerial technocrat in this committee, so I will respond to the technical issues, since I'm not in the debate now in the legislature. But I want to thank all the members. I think all the questions were solid questions, good questions, and to our member who made entirely dependent on the presentations to his hearing abilities, I want to congratulate him. He's an excellent, outstanding listener. We can all learn from that experience. So thank you very much also for that. The issue of maintenance and repairs will be dealt with. We have no, in the Western Cape, we don't have any monarchy. There's only one monarchy, and that is King Anna Queen, and her name is Maintenance and Repairs. So we have prioritized repairs and maintenance throughout this Western Cape. In fact, I appointed a ministerial committee. I chair that committee. I have met on Monday last week in the specific ministerial infrastructure committee, and I'm monitoring also the top 10 infrastructure project, and I also monitor the Treasury's benchmark, the ratios for percentage for grant property equipment, which is 83%. I have informed all the mayors here in the Western Cape. We must comply with that, but I also told the MECC in the Western Cape. We cannot only help the municipalities accountable, we must also help ourselves accountable in the context of repairs and maintenance. In fact, in this particular regard, I will soon visit one of the major institutions here in the Western Cape where I am not happy with the repairs and maintenance, so I'm going personally to look at it. In fact, next Monday, I'm going to personally also visit a desalination plant to see that they not only have the plant, but it is proper to repair and maintenance of those plants. So I take the point that the member of the committee made about repairs and maintenance, but in terms of the specifics of the hospital, the colleagues will answer and just give the broader content. My colleagues will also answer the issue of the medical legal case, but I have to say what we have in the Western Cape that worked very well, Chair, is that we have a medical doctor who is also an advocate. And that helps us a lot with medical legal things. Because what happens in this situation, when Dr. Motsaledi came to the Budget Council and he told us what happened in hospitals nowadays. There are lawyers that walk into the hospital looking for somebody they like, grab a file, and sue the state. So we are fully aware of the situations. So we have a medical doctor that's also a lawyer. So we understand both the medical practice and the legal practice, so he can defend us. And that's why we have the lowest medical legal fees. But I think if there is a question about why have it so substantively increased, so the colleagues must answer that question. The water long-term plan, colleagues have asked about that. I have met this morning with the Mainkom member of finance of the city of Cape Town about the long-term water plan. I have seen in the draft budget, I also attended the LCM Tech budget assessment in the city of Cape Town, where I saw for the next 5 years they have tabled a budget for 19 billion. They have told me this morning that they have reduced it to the amount of 14 billion rand, and to also to bring some relief for both the taxpayers for property rates and also for the water tariffs. So we are working with them. They now have also weekly monitoring on the expenditure, and particularly since they have now a new municipal manager, and he's very clued up in terms of that. We also see that the office, because I monitor the top 10 infrastructure project chair of all the municipalities in the Western Cape, and I've seen specifically that 8 of the top 10 infrastructure projects are related to the voting customer. So we are monitoring it also, and I've also asked them to submit today the latest new updated voting plans. But I think it might be a good idea for this committee to consider to invite the city and the water plan to one of your committees so they can have a deeper brief. I can just give you the broader plans for that. But what we have done in terms of the long-term water plan, I don't want to call it a long-term water plan, an interim plan, because we have to be in a crisis in the Western Cape. We have tabled also for this year under review a water and drought budget of 422 million rand. I have also reserved 100 million rand for any further crisis that may come during the year, maybe a flood or water shortage in Kanaman from Beaufort West, so that we can immediately release money. But also we know that drought is broken through floods. So we also have 100 million, not only for wanting new water, but also to deal with a flood or any particular fire. So we have made such amounts available, but the most important critical thing here is to avoid contingent liabilities against the state. We have made money available specifically in the region of more closer to 500 million, half a billion, from the education budget towards infrastructure, specifically to deal with issues of the drought. For example, water, boreholes, reticulation, because I think it is really a sin to live in an area where you have a drought and then you flush your toilet with drinking quality water. So we are very thoroughly bold, make sure that the reticulation takes place from that water into the toilet systems and the sanitation, but also more importantly, chair and members, hospital must have water. Because if a hospital runs out of water, somebody dies, then we increase the medical need of them. So we also believe with that, but we have extensively made allocations also to people in terms of our own facilities and also water reduction in our, because we have got 2,000 buildings, schools, clinics, hospitals, libraries, and we make sure that we lead also by example in that. I think, Chair, my colleagues can answer the issue of the transport. I think that is the issue. I'm tired of leaving my house 5 o'clock in the morning, so I would also like the city of Cape Town to help me so that I can sleep 1 hour later with my wife. But with this transport crisis, I leave my house and my wife asks, where am I going? I say, I'm going to the roads of the city of Cape Town. But, Chair, might be a good idea also to invite them, because this morning I was also informed that the main understanding in the city relates to the public transport budget. So I think they must come to your committee and explain. I'm in the separate sphere of government, but I think that is something that is worth noting. I think the issues of the constitutionalism, I think that is a very valid point. Thank you very much. We watch very closely our fiscal responsibilities in terms of the constitution. Your question was, in terms of the obligations and service delivery, the strategies that in place to manage it, to see that the understanding. What are we doing? We do the normal stuff, working the IYL, the Indian monitoring. We do the quarterly performance reports. I also, on a regular basis, we have a team called CGRO, Corporate Governance Review Outlook. On a quarterly basis, I go to the cabinet, and I give the indication of the spending patterns, the quality of the work, which things are delayed. I'm also giving an indication of which contracts are currently in delay. So we do corporate governance. We also look at the Auditor General's previous findings and the SCOPA, Chair. We look at the SCOPA as we develop a government action plan specifically on those issues that were raised by SCOPA and the Auditor General. So those are the things. But I think the point is noted, colleague, about does it affect, and I think there was a similar question, does it affect the your EPPs and your targets relating to that? We are in discussions with the department. If you reduce your specific budgetary indications, then certainly there must be a reduction in terms of your PPP, in terms of your target. But we are monitoring also very clearly the performance indicators as it relates to the APP. The wellness, yes. The question was, what type of wellness, what is it? Colleagues will be pleased to know that we have a health 2030 plan. There are many people with lifestyle disease, but half of them don't know they suffer from lifestyle disease. High blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes. they eat as if they have no, nothing to worry about. In fact, one person said, when we said, you can't do that, you have this and this. He said, don't worry, I've got medical aid. So that's not the type of answer we want. We want people to have healthy lifestyle, and there is a program within the health department. They also have health clubs. They also have health and wellness awareness sessions. In fact, the NEC Minister, Dr. Mokrent and Bommel, she's leading the health and wellness campaign. You're welcome, colleague, to join us in the gardens. The minister leads the wellness campaign here. There's also yesterday, they opened a gym in Kravata in the West Coast, opened a gym for people to take part in wellness. But there's also wellness clubs. You go to Google Earth, you will see there's a wellness club, because we have recreation centers that stay empty. So what we do with the recreation and sport, we bring people, sometimes the instructor, sometimes older persons that need to stretch, like they do in India, China, to get a little bit of relaxation into the system. We want to move away from, you must go to the hospital when you're sick. We want to take people out, take personal responsibility for your wellness. And also, in fact, one of the practical things is we are now going to, we have a cafeteria. We promote wellness, but the cafeteria in our leisure center is antique wellness. So we are going to change that. So, deaf, go to municipalities. We have also a deaf management committee, because I think this committee chair has also encouraged provinces to pay the debt. You cannot talk about sustainable and viable municipalities and then provinces own municipalities budgets. And so we are having those committees, those structures in place, and I'm very happy that the Western Cape, we have a proud record. The National Treasury has given me that report that we are clean in terms of debt owed to the municipalities by the Western Cape government. The spike in March, the politics. The spike in marks, the colleagues can answer that. The National Treasury, Health and Education, the concerns, they help my colleagues will answer. There was a question about the heart transplant.
Yeah.
Yes. I can't comment on that except to say you will see that I spoke about innovation as one of the budget principles. If you go today to Groupersville Hospital, you can ask anybody who is an innovation ambassador. So we have now appointed innovation ambassadors. And one of the innovation ambassadors is from the heart transplant unit. They have developed through the medical school and the hospital plastic valve for the heart that has now international recognition in that particular unit. And it's a global innovation and global recognition. So that is really world-class stuff. So I think if you have any heart problems in this committee, we can recommend testing. You will live long.
Is it free?
So is this the hospital just on the street?
If you have income record, it will be free. Yes. But this is world-class innovation, and this was recognized by the Germans. So it tells us something about quality. If it was Chinese or so, I would have doubted it, but the Germans have recognized it. So this is, but the main point is to drive innovation and reward innovation. That is one of the principles. The learner-teacher ratio is a concern. The patient transport is a concern. The college must answer. Colleagues, you speak about housing. Before we have received the third adjustment, I specifically informed Minister Bondi was in my division. I said, Minister, can you spend this 100 million rand that comes from the human settlement development grant? Because I'm not going to table a bill in Parliament. In our legislature, you cannot spend it. He gave me the assurance, and I'm quite happy that 100% of that money will be spent. And I'm also happy that in his department, he spent 100% of his budget, because I monitor that very closely. Contract, understanding that happened, there was a question. We had that problem in the past, from both provinces. But there was a contractual problem in Freedom of Hospital. We had to stop that tender, the legal services, the things are now on track. I personally visited last year two community health centers, one in Perth, Hamlet, and the other one in Woolsey, both in Wittenberg area. I went with Dr. Mbombo, and what I saw there is two exactly the same plans, same hospital, one in Hamlet and one in Wolfsburg, exactly the same design, two different contractors. One delivered it on time, perfectly well opened. I went to the minister again to open it. The one in Wolfsburg, contractor, bad management, cannot manage the contract, bad project management, and that cost have cost implications. And I think that is a universal thing. For a member effort, CAPEX construction delays, need not here, so I won't answer, so I can state that responsibility. Understanding on COE, the colleagues will look at that, the negative impact. We also look at details, understanding how does that relate to your PPP. So if there's an understanding, there's a under delivery on the APP, then you see there's issues of concern. Claims against the state, they will speak about it. I've spoken about Dr. Mussolini. Yes, unauthorized experience in the Western Cape. We have a jail sentence. We don't allow that in the plan. So anybody that has unauthorized experience, we send you straight to Portsmouth. Atlantis, Atlantis, yes, is there. There was a question about Atlantis, and I think this is an important matter, chairperson, because Atlantis is a special economic zone. We work with DGI. They are part of the, I'm also serving part of the mandating committee, and we're making great progress. We met last week. One of the things we are now developing, in fact, I'm going to cabinet soon, to establish a special economic infrastructure entity, so that, because in government there's always a lot of delays, red tape, so we will, for SEZ, you want to see things happen. So we will establish, based on the experience of other SEZ, a special economic infrastructure entity, so that that entity can get things going faster, more efficient than in public works domain. So that is going. I was informed, I've met with the Deputy Minister of Small and Medium Enterprises, the Deputy Minister of Communications, and the Deputy Minister of DTI. We were together last month in Atlanta, and one of the things that they indicated here to us is that this thing will soon come to the National Cabinet to declare Atlanta a special economic zone, and we are waiting and optimistic for that announcement. Our colleague, the Spoke of Returns, thank you for your satisfactory comments. You make my heart feel bumping, and because you know that your chair and person of this committee in my hometown speak both the language that we spoke, so we will leave here with a whole team when we leave this committee. In local government, there is a problem that I did discuss with one of the chief directors, and that she told me that she has three senior managers absent. This woman is the chief director in local government, and she told me she has three directors vacancies in her unit. And I said to her, you can't, it was 30 minutes of time, you need a server thing. And she told me that the salary level of people working in the city of Cape Town and other municipalities are much higher than the provincial government. So you work 2-3 years in the local government, in the province, and you see a post there, and there, then you jump. And sometimes it's 500,000 or more than what they are paying. So I think these are permanent challenges we're going to have. People are going to migrate. I try to make the work environment happy for my staff not to be. I try my best. I don't succeed at all times. I think the term of the staff are familiar that clients are going nowhere. So we try to do that, create a working environment. The policy will speak to page 27, the issue of the generalizing and testing of the sustained account. We've spoken about the best increase. We all accept here. There's one thing we cannot do. That is a regressive tax. It's a statement of fact, but how we politically play it is another platform. The crews, he will speak about it, and then the understanding of the LPO to the chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean.
Chairperson and the good afternoon. Chair, if you'd allow, I mean, I'd like Jolinda to and Klaas to deal with the infrastructure, like those questions that are still remaining. I think also just acknowledge that you covered a lot of the questions in your response. So it's going to pick up some of the remaining issues and then at least on the anything on the public finance. So maybe just one or two things from my side. Chair, I think we have responded to the issue of the reasons for this increase in the medical legal expenditure. I think it's for the committee to understand. I mean, those are some of those claims that have been submitted 2, 3, 4 years down the line, and you know, these things come to solution as these things go. They go through negotiated processes or the court. At the end of the day, they must be settled. So, but we do acknowledge the concern, and I think this is at a macro level. I mean, this is an item that I mean, my colleague at National Treasury can confirm. I mean, it is something that we discuss almost every next meeting with the Budget Council, also at the Technical Committee of Finance. So maybe just make one or two comments around what we're doing in that regard. So, I mean, we have applied our minds in terms of what's necessary to address the issue. And I must say, Minister Mussolini has taken the lead in terms of pulling these things together with the team finance, with the Budget Council guidance. And maybe just to mention one or two or three things. I mean, from a broad perspective, the key focus is to try and get the governance right. I mean, Minister Mayer has spoken about it. I mean, the challenges within the system itself is not addressed will lead to spiraling costs. So, Minister has indicated that in our context, we've managed to have both the medical practitioner as well as the legal in one body, but I mean, that's not always possible. So, one of the initiatives that we arrived at was the capacitation of medical legal units within provinces. And then obviously what the first step is to try and negotiate through mediation and arbitration process and settle claims. And then obviously there is a broader issue around law reform, which is obviously a longer process. And then importantly, what happens with patient counseling. It was quite horrifying to hear that, you know, somehow these let me choose my words, I think let me say that lawyers or people acting on behalf of potential claimants with access to medical files unknowingly to the state, and it's obviously unauthorized access, and then they use it as a basis for starting claims, and obviously the health sector is concerned about it, you know, so that's why there's a focus on the government to make sure that we at least protect the patient record, we start with the process and not that could lead to mediation, because it's obviously a more cost-effective approach than going to court. And then what has been asked of National Treasury is to get a team together to sort of a transversal center to address the legal capacity in provinces. Chairman, the second issue I want to perhaps also respond to. I mean, there is a process to deal with surplus and wasteful expenditure, illegal expenditure. I must state that. And the process is important because it makes sure that each of those individual cases are dealt with. And that requires, it makes sure that the process itself that we must report firstly on completely on all fruitless irregular incidents. And then when these things are then reported, that they're then dealt with in terms of the consequence management process. So without going into the specific ones of each and every department, I mean, these things are reported in our annual report. And if you go to the annual report, they are actually specified per incident what has happened with each of these cases and then the consequence management that flows from that. So I think we're comfortable that there's transparency in the reporting and there's consequence management in place. And whatever the consequences, I mean, that is also through a performance management process. Then the issue maybe just on water management, I think the minister has indicated, I mean, I'm sure the committee is aware that within provinces, there isn't a department for water affairs. I mean, water reticulation is a competency of different spheres of government. I mean, the national government plays a role there, and the provincial and the local authorities play a role there. I mean, that is not to say we're abdicating our responsibilities. I mean, we've got a disaster management responsibility, and also through that responsibility, we obviously want to make sure there's continuity. So, what I think the minister has spoken about is, I mean, through our algae intake process, that's a local government process, we made sure that we raised the red flag on relation to what municipalities are doing to make sure that there's sustainability in the water. The demand for water and supply of water is a problem. There is a challenge, and it's a real challenge. We can't make it right. So we are looking at other initiatives to ensure that the water supply is augmented. So Minister Mayer has spoken about some of the boreholes projects, and to the extent that it was possible, we also look at our own infrastructure. He mentioned the hospitals, the schools. So some of the core infrastructure we look at from the continuity perspective, what do we need to put in place, and we've made sure that we try to address that through our own budget capability. I can also say that, I mean, in our meeting with the City of Cape Town, we had our budget discussions with them, they have been quite clear that water augmentation is a key priority for them. So that means that other projects will have to be reprioritized from. I mean, that is currently the situation that we face with from a crisis management perspective. But they have got plans in place, and they are trying to direct the challenges with regards to water.
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, members. There were a number of questions on the infrastructure side. Some of them are perhaps points on similar on issues. But let me start with Member Mzimande. The question that was asked was around the property rates. However, it is actually around property payments. I just confirmed with our colleague here from National Treasury. So the issue that they were raising is in terms of property payments, and if we then take property payments and take it, it boils down to maintenance and repairs. I'm going to deal with there were a number of members that were asking around the issue around maintenance and repairs. So there's various reasons for that. One is in terms of, I think the main one, and I think the presenter, when Annalise presented the case, she raised the issue around with us having to pass pre-assessment budget. And the fact that we had to deal with a first response, as a first responder to the fire, to the flood, and then to the drought. And part of that response required a reprioritization or a relook at what we initially planned in terms of infrastructure to happen and then shifted to maintenance. A lot of the damage was actually in terms of schools and roofs. And when you have that type of unforeseen events in the course of a financial year, I think we were extremely lucky to get to the type of numbers that we actually see. We're fanning up in terms of the end of the financial year. We'll be looking at the 1.6% overall under expenditure on infrastructure. Having said that, I think we we still have room for improvement, particularly in terms of some of the things that we could have direct under control, which is trying to put our framework agreements in place in terms of the speed with which we can execute that can still be improved. The second issue in the main that we were dealing with is in terms of contractor performance. So when the contractor is on site, then we have picked up over a number of projects, and it cuts across health and education. The contractor performance is one of the issues that that came out. There was an issue that National Treasury raised, and one of the members raised it in terms of the Housing Development Agency. The minister indicated that the money was received, or we put that amount to the legislature only in March, we received it in February. But that in the main was the land purchase, so some of the funding or the funding that went to the Housing Development Agency would include then funding for land in terms of Philippines and in Google A2 for housing development as well as in the moon. So that funding then went through in terms of the infrastructure part of it. Then there was an issue around the transport. The question was what plans we have. I think because this is mainly, we deal with the road part of the transport network in the main and the provincial road. The bulk of these issues are with the city. We have just completed our LGM tech process. What I can indicate to the committee, and Malcolm can come in here if I am leaving out some of the information, but what I can leave with the committee is the fact that the city adopted the implementation strategy for integrated public transport network, which prioritizes 5 new MyCity corridors, and I think this may be that was done on the 26th of April. And I can maybe just give the one corridor is connecting Rheinberg with Kailicha. The second one is connecting it with Plain with Claremont. D17 connects Kailicha with the Century City. D12 is the Klipfontein Road connecting with Mitchell's Plain and the CBD. T13 is Symphony Way connecting with Mitchell's Plain and Durbanville. And then there's the Blue Downs Rail Corridor, which is a 9 kilometers between Molondiwe Station and Kailicha, and Tails River Station, and that will give us 3 new stations, namely in Poleni, Blue Downs, and Wimbledon. So, Chair, I think and I hope I have covered all the infrastructure. Thank you, Chair.
Most of these are in terms of infrastructure, and explains the timing between the service gets delivered and then actually gets the e-book. So the departments don't assign upon e-books and make sure the all the chips are covered. And in the environment where you have cash budgets with accrual, with invoices that get paid later on, there is a time that's for 30 days before a e-book is paid. So in the north, the total accrual is less than 10% of the total.
Let me start by saying that the local government department is not a major regulating department. In fact, if you look at the budget, it was actually 53,000 only in terms of the adjustment budget. The collection, of course, is moved to 1,060,000. At 53,000, that would actually consist less than 0.0017% of the revenue budget. As such, from that low base, any small change actually will reflect as a large percentage change. That said, the change, the move from 53,000 that was actually budgeted to 1,060,000 is actually a result of what is called financial transactions in assets and liabilities, which in fact is not actually real revenue in the sense of the what we would want to see. It really relates to receipts from debtors in the previous financial year and any understanding that's been brought over. Then that is then recognized as one revenue.
Thank you. You're done. Thank you, Mr. and your team for a well presented report.
I think
No, I didn't forget him.
No, I thought that maybe that there was a question that was directed to us from one of the
ones. Yeah, there was.
We could have got some medical patients.
There was.
Yeah. Okay, no, I think in terms of what we are doing from national, there have been a series of buzzards that, provinces have been giving to students and sending them to Cuba, etc., to go and study this field. But the problem is that, first of all, is that medical specialists, in most cases, they prefer to operate in areas where there are central hospitals. And so those are the hospitals that have got some sort of specialized equipment that they can use to operate. And then the other thing is that, even when those that we have given them budget come back, you can tie them to a specific number of years. You can't give them contract for air. And once those number of years expire, what happens is that, as I said, they don't have a control over what happens. And most of them then, as my colleague has indicated, they then will leave the public station, come back on a seasonal basis. So they would rather prefer having their own tribes and also a set government on that basis, which is also a serious concern. And then the other one is that to also keep them in the rural areas, it's a problem. Even if you give incentives, there was sometimes when we visited an area in the Northern Cape called Kenya, where there was a very nice clinic that had been built with accommodation for health professionals, but there were no nurses, there were no doctors, because the area was just in the middle of nowhere. It was 260 kilometers away from Upington. I mean, which creates that problem. And there are other ones also, I mean, once they become sessional doctors, I mean, because they deal with specialized services, so they would rather open their practices where, I mean, there is a large population of insured people, where they've got people that have got your medical aids. I mean, what if you go and open in Limpopo where perhaps maybe you've got 1% of the people that have got medical aids? People are likely not to afford your services. So what they do is they tend to opt for a province like the Western Cape and Gauteng. But I mean, there has been some intervention from both the national departments and the sector to try and keep them. Just that it has been difficult. Because, I mean, you can also, I mean, relate to the recent stories of oncology services in KZN. I mean, and some of the reasons that we also indicated there was that, I mean, even the infrastructure itself that we put, I mean, our infrastructure is not up to standard. It sort of discourages them to operate in our hospitals because they are not up to that required standard that they want themselves. So those are some of the problems that we have. Okay.
Thank you. Treasury, it's what we do about the problems, the challenges. That's what we have to solve. Honourable members, what came up in this presentation and the reply, and I take you back to the 29th of January 2017, when the Cape Town Metro appeared before this comment. And after that, we went to Saldanha. You remember? That we call back the city of Cape Town to come and reply to what the provincial treasury Western Cape has highlighted to us, the water and the transport issue. Because that is crucial. What is the next 30-year plan of Cape Town Metro seeing the influx, migration of people from Cape Town? And that's the reality. When you come into land from False Bay by plane, you fly over an area, I call it Batisdorp. Yes. That area is expanding in formal structure. Just look at it. When you fly over this country, look what's down. You get this picture. When you fly into Bloemfontein, see what's happening in Bloemfontein. Mangaroon, yes. That's what we have to address. That's the reality. Atlanta is becoming the new city in the Cape Nation. That's what's going to happen there in terms of this development. There was an article in Business Day in November 2017 looking at this development. That's a new city on the west coast of this metro that will link up with a blowback strand. Yes. That's what's going to happen. So there will have to be a railway line to Atlantis. Yes. Transport to London. Thank you for your presentations. We wish you well. And we hope we can see you before we go to elections in 2019, but we have a very, very packed program. Also to the National Treasury, we're going to release you now. We're going into our housekeeping, that's our minute, and the way forward. Thank you. Thank you, Treasury.
Thank you.
The rest of your team.
Thank you.
The PBO. I forgot to mention him. It was, Dr. Yangi. Honourable members, the 13th of minutes, it's incredible. I can't understand why, because we were the 29th of November. Okay, here's the message. The updated document. The updated one. Thank you, members. Let's focus on the minutes in front of us. Starting with the minutes of the 29th of November, 2017. Where we received a briefing on, from the National Treasury and SARS on the insurance bill, as well as deliberations on the rates and monetary amounts amendment of the revenue laws bill, the tax laws amendment bill, and the tax administration laws amendment bill. I put in bullet. We passed it in March 2017. I put the members page 1. You can try and recall. And I put the members page 2. There's a mover on the Isaac move to adoption. Can I get a second there? I see a hand down there on the Shimango. Thank you. Thank you. What's your concern?
In the written year, I was absent.
Pardon?
I was not yet a member. In the written year, myself and Zumanda were absent. And myself was not yet a member.
Well, the secretariat was looking at that.
Yes.
All the members, I put to you, thank you for the those minutes. Thank you. The first of December 2017. Yes. Thank you for taking me. Thank you. I thank you to the minutes of the 1st of December from the Federation Adoption of Minutes of Reports on the Rates and Monetary Amounts, the Tax Laws, etc. Page 1. I put the members page 2. Consideration of Reports. I put to members page 3. I put to members the minutes of the 1st of December. I can move for adoption. Honorable Monekeri moves. Honorable Motara second. Thank you. You will recall Honorable Motara was not there. The outcome of this series of meetings was that bills we addressed, the members were concerned that we are rushing legislation, and we started with the standing committee to meet jointly, like we did on the carbon tax. And this will be the process going forward, as we also did with the rates bill, including the VAT issue. Right. The minutes of the 13th of February, that's on the draft carbon tax, excuse me, briefing by the National Treasury and Department of Environmental Affairs on the draft carbon tax bill, I put the members page 1. That was present, etc. And I put to you page 2.
I
put the minutes of 30 February to the members of the Motara and move to adoption. There was apology for you. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
The 13th of February, Honorable Motashukin moves for adoption. Honorable Monakeri second. Right. All the members, the 20th of February 2018. Yeah, we start with the new year. The pre-budget briefing by the PBO. 20th February. No one was absent. Page 1. Page 2. Right this way. And page 3. I put to remember the minutes of 20 February, 2018, Honorable Artesa, moves for adoption, and Honorable Montara. That takes us to the 22nd of February, Honorable Members, the briefing by the Minister of Finance on the 2018 budget. The former Minister of Finance, Mauricio Pizarro. I put to you page 1. I put to members page 2, the presentation by the Treasury that carries on page 3, as well as the matters that was raised, and page 4. I put to members the minutes of the 22nd of February 2018. Move for adoption, thank you, Honorable Notara, Honorable Jessup second. That takes us to the 27th of February. A briefing by the PBO and the FHC on the 2018 budget, with a joint meeting with the other committees of finance and appropriations. Page 1. Page 2, presentation by the FNC. Page 3, PBO's presentation. And page 4. Although was a shipping moves for adoption, the seconder, although it's a second. That takes us to the minutes of the 28th. Of February 2018, public hearings on the 2018 budget, the framework and revenue proposals, joint meeting of standing cost of finance. I put to you page 1 of the members, page 2 presentations by the stakeholders, you see the presentation. And committee resolutions. And page 3, conclusion. Although Motor Shipping moves to adoption, the seconder, Tablans, we go to the 2nd of March 2018. Responses by the National Treasury on submissions made during public hearings. The 2nd of March, 2018. The 2nd of March, we're the March.
We don't have.
We have the 6th of March.
We have the 6th of March.
I can't get whipped by the DA.
Are you talking about this financial trading?
Order.
You read it from the news.
Order. I know you are all energetic, but yes. Do you have a copy, member?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. The 2nd of March. I put the members page 1. Yeah. I put the members page 2, responses by the National Treasury. I put the members page 3.
Money wasn't there.
And I put the members the minutes of the 2nd of March 2018. Although Monachini moves for adoption, the second is on the budget. Thank you. That takes us to the minutes of the 5th of March. Meetings were running. 6th March 2018, you have it? You have the copy? Consideration adoption of committee report on the 2018 budget.
fiscal framework and revenue proposal. Page one. That's where Honorable Tobias was the co-chair. Finance. And page two, sponsored by the National Treasury. Honorable Shipping, moves for adoption. Honorable Motara, second. Thank you, Honorable Members. I know.
It was in this room.
All the members, 7th of March, the minutes of 7 March 2018, briefing by the Land Bank on the annual report. Page 1. Page 2 is the presentation which you receive. That's it. Honorable Shipping moves for adoption and Honorable Isaac second. That takes us to April 2018. For the public hearings on the draft rates and monetary amount and amendment of revenue laws, bill that includes the VAT. This was a very interesting hearing. I put to members page 1, a lot of names. I put in members page 2, commissioned by the Labour Tax Committee, Osatu, Sama, all the presentations and those who made presentations, page 3, and page 4, committee resolutions. Now, this is work in progress. Because we have to call the Minister of Finance to appear before us, but that will be a joint meeting of the Committee on Finance. I put the minutes of 24th of April 2018 to the members, Honorable Makedi proposes, and Honorable Motara seconds. That takes us to May. Yeah, we are in May. May 2018, 15th of May. Briefing by the Eastern Cape Provincial Treasury on the preliminary 2017-18 budget outcomes. Page 1. This is where the MEC was hospitalized. Page 2. Straightforward. Although Motashupin moves and also Monakedi second. That brings us to the minutes of the 24th of May, that was the first thing. Consideration of the expiry. That was mailed to us. Right, this one stands over. That takes us to the 29th of May. I'm checking when I have my breakfast in the morning. Yeah, it takes quite the time to run. Yes. I know. Do you want this to stand over?
No, we have.
All right. Okay. I put to you 29th of May 2018 when the Popo province in Northern Cape appeared before us. There is the name. Straightforward, Honorable Members. I put the minutes of this meeting, Honorable Molakedi moves and Honorable Motla Shipping seconds. Honorable Members, that brings us to the end of this meeting. Our next engagement is next week. Please advise us who's coming, because why? The Free State, Gauteng and KZN has been rescheduled because of engagements of MEC who can't be here. So Gauteng Mpumalanga is next Tuesday.
Fantastic. And so we carry on until we end. Our last meeting for June will be on the 26th of June, when we will be dealing with the public audit amendment bill that's been referred to us. It's a priority bill. We're getting the briefing in the morning. We're doing a public hearing, and then we'll take it to the House on the 28th, the last plenary session after NCLP, and advertisements have been placed. Are you busy with that? Fine. Yes.
Just now we were allowed to receive an SMS from Jeremy McCann. Now they are saying, can we shift our meeting on this day to an earlier date, which we don't have? Meaning the chair will have to engage and Mutara with that office. So we don't have another date because we need to pay the lab that it goes for up for 2 weeks.
Yes.
But we chair and Mutara with the office. But now they want to have a plenary at 10 on the 26th.
No, we took a decision in 2017 December. We're not going to rush in this legislation. Let's stick to our own resolution.
We don't have to rush.
We've got a representative from the Votara in the program meeting and in the WIPS meeting. So you give that assignment to her as well.
No, we can't.
Thank you, honorable members. That concludes the meeting. This meeting is closed and adjourned.
Thank you.
Just one here.